Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The team now needs literally another 1% of performance. And that's the type of thing that a driver like Lewis Hamilton, a 7-time world champion, who is absolutely hungry for that 8th world championship, right? He is, make no mistake about this guy, he is desperate for that world championship. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing it.
Hello and welcome to the James Allen on F1 podcast, brought to you by Autosport. This week, we meet Ferrari F1 team boss Fred Vasseur, the man bringing Lewis Hamilton to Ferrari. Fred is now 56. He's been in motorsport for 35 years and had huge success in F3 and GP2, which is the forerunner of Formula 2, with ART, his own team, making champions of drivers like Hamilton, Nico Rosberg and Nico Hülkenberg. He came into Formula 1 in 2016 with the Renault F1 team, and then he migrated to Sauber in 2017, where he gave Charles Leclerc his first big break in Formula 1. He's going to tell us today a little bit about how Lewis Hamilton is going to move Ferrari forwards and what or who else they still need in order to win the title. He's going to talk about managing the fragile confidence of Ferrari team members and how he's pushing them to take more risks. I'm delighted to say in the studio with us today, we're going to analyse all this alongside my colleagues at Roberto Quincaro, the F1 editor of motorsport.com in Italy. Roberto, ciao. Whereabouts in the world are you now?
Ciao, ciao, everybody. I'll be in Barcelona, close to Montmeló, ready for the Grand Prix weekend.
Ready for the Grand Prix weekend. And none other than Rob Smedley, former engineer to Felipe Massa at Ferrari, who coined the immortal words, Fernando is faster than you. Roberto, can you see one of the Ferrari engineers next year giving that message to either Lewis Hamilton or Charles Leclerc?
I don't think so. I think nobody has the personality that Rob had.
Yeah, that's quite true. That's definitely true. Rob, welcome. Set the scene for us for our interview with Fred Vasseur. You worked at Ferrari under Jean Todt, the only other non-Italian who's led the Ferrari F1 team. 14 world championships, constructors and drivers, between 1999 and 2008 that you guys won. What is the secret sauce to winning with Ferrari?
I think the winning... the secret sauce, when certainly when I was there, and I tended to see both sides of the coin as well, was, and we're going to get into this a little bit later on with the interview with Fred, is that it's very important that the team is allowed to get on with its job. It's very important that there's protection from above, and if you can do that and you can harness the passion and the intellect and the capability of the team, of any Ferrari team, I think throughout the ages, then you can end up with a winning formula. And I certainly think that's where Ferrari are headed now.
And tell us a little bit about what you're doing today, because you're no longer active going to all the Grand Prix anymore, are you, after a long career at the coalface? What are you doing these days?
No, that's right. I mean, I'm still active in and around Formula One, so I get to probably 7, 8, something like that, Grand Prix a year, because we're still doing lots of business in the paddock. So we've got an engineering technology business, the eponymously named Smedley Group. I didn't name it. Somebody else did. And we do, you know, lots of stuff that we were doing in Formula One. So data analytics but using it for sports broadcasting, engineering, like motorsport engineering. One of the principal project that we've got is Global Karting League, which looks to democratize karting. So it looks to get more kids involved in outdoor, competitive, serious karting, giving a credible pathway through the karting space and beyond. We want to get into the pathway beyond as well. And we've got great plans for that. We're going to be expanding globally in 2025. We're already up and running in the UK, so this is going to be really, really, you know, super excited for us. And definitely, if we can get more kids involved at a driving level and at an engineering level, it's an awesome project.
Well, that sounds really good. I mean, anything that makes motorsport more accessible to more people is definitely a good thing. And that leads us nicely, really, onto our feature interview with Fred Vasseur, a guy who has brought a lot of young drivers through and turned them into champions and ultimately into Formula One drivers as well. As I mentioned earlier, he's only the second non-Italian in 75 years to manage the team. I went over to Maranello to his office in the Gestione Sportiva and began by asking him how different the experience is of managing Ferrari for a non-Italian compared to the others. Fred, you're only the second non-Italian to lead Ferrari in Formula One. Has it been a different kind of experience for you, do you think, from your predecessors?
This is difficult to judge. And first, I don't want to speak about the past, that the fact to be a non-Italian, you have the pros and cons as every single situation that I'm struggling a little bit with my Italian, and it's not the best to build up the relationship with the mechanics on track and so, but but in the other end, it's also cool sometimes to have a kind of distance and time for reaction and a bit less of emotion, and so that it's, I think it's a good way to manage the situation.
It must have its advantages in the way that you experience the pressure, I would have thought.
Yeah, because you are a bit more distant, and the time of the translation sometimes is also a
thinking time.
And I think this is positive, and that I think it's, I think at least it's not a disadvantage. Voilà, that, but I need to improve my Italians to be able to have a beer with the mechanics.
Very good. One of my observations of Ferrari, leading Ferrari over the years, is it's really, really important that the person who sits in your role protects the team underneath like a kind of a steel umbrella, from whether it's what's coming down from the corporate level or what's coming in from the media or all the other outside forces, shall we call it. Seems to me you've understood that. How do you actually put that into force yourself?
It's a good point that I push the team to take more risk. It means that when you take risk, you do mistakes, and it's going together. But we have to assume the mistakes, and my job is to assume the mistake of the team and to avoid to expose them. And but if you are scared about the capacity of taking risk, you take margins everywhere, and in our business, when you have five cars in one tenth, that you are dead. That it means that I spent the last 15 months to push everybody to take a bit more risk, to have also a kind of better risk management, for sure, because more we'll take risk, better we'll be into the management of this risk. And I'm really pleased with the step forward that we did over the last year.
How do you manage the stress on yourself and also apply the right level of pressure to the team, but without introducing that negativity? Because that's a very fine balance, it would seem to me, which could destroy the team, you know, in many ways.
On myself, I don't need to put pressure, because that I spent the last 35 years of my life on the pit wall. For sure, the pressure is different, the approach is different, but I think sometimes in the past, I had also it was not drive to survive, it was win to survive, you know, that, and at this stage, the pressure was huge also, because I was putting the company in danger, and so that it's, you have to keep it in mind. I think the story about the pressure into the team is, everybody has the pressure on the grid, everybody is, Ferrari, we don't have to be scared about the consequence of what we are doing. That we have, you have to manage the risk, you have to manage the limit, to be at the limit in every single area. And it's not just about drivers, it's on every single area of the company. But the team perhaps in the past was a bit scared about, as you said, external forces, or I don't know what how do you want to call it, but it's probably my job to manage this, to push them to be a bit more aggressive, and then to assume the mistakes when we are doing mistakes.
One of the things that's really noticeable with you is that you use humor a lot, certainly externally. Tell me a little bit about that and that approach. Do you use it internally as well?
I'm like this, but honestly, that you can do something very seriously and to take it something sometimes a bit more relaxed. And that I know that every single team member is pushing like hell, working like hell, 24/7, on track and at the factory when we have to bring upgrades. And so they are pushing, working 7 days a week. And so that it means that sometimes we have to be a bit more relaxed, but it's not that we are not doing things seriously, and that it's you can do both together.
But it helps to get results out of people.
My assistant is telling me each morning that we are doing the best job of the world. And you have also to keep it in mind that 30 years ago when I started, I was not dreaming about the F1, but because I was dreaming about F3. But you can't complain when you are doing what we are doing, that I think somehow that you have more and more fans who would dream to join the F1 paddock, who would dream to join a race, that we are there. Honestly, that we are, it's a privilege for me to be there. And we have to enjoy what we are doing. Then you can do it very seriously and you can push and you can try to get the best of everybody and to get the best results. But I'm not sure that I would be faster if I was not smiling.
So the team's going well. Obviously, you've made a good car. You've got good momentum. And operationally, you've improved things. That's clear. How will Lewis Hamilton help you to move that even further forward as a driver?
Yeah, but the driver is not the contribution of the driver is not just the capacity to be fast in the last lap of the quali. And the job of the driver is to motivate everybody, to give a direction for the development, to be there at the factory, to get the best from everybody, because that when you have more than 1,000 people, if we are able to extract a little bit more from everybody, it's a huge difference at the end. And I'm really convinced that Lewis will be a performance contributor on every single topic, and the combination with Charles will be a very good one. And this I'm really convinced. And it's at the end, it's a package. It's not just the fact that someone is quick or whatever. That it's, I'm sure that we need also to have the experience of a championship winner. That Lewis won 7 championships, not in a row, but he's coming with a huge experience, from Mercedes. And this is also important for us, because that we need to be able to have a kind of transfer of experience, know-how from the other teams. And in the past, we were a bit isolated, and it's not the best way to improve.
So obviously you won championships with him back in that day, in his junior career, when he was 20, 21 years old. He's going to be 40 in January, and it can go one of two ways with champions when they get the other side of their 40th birthday. They can either maintain peak levels, as we see to some extent Alonso today is very, very competitive, or it can be less competitive beyond 40. Are you confident he'll be just as competitive beyond 40?
Yeah, for me, more than confident, because that the difference is the motivation. For sure that when you are 40, or if you are not in a positive environment, you don't have the feeling that you can win, that you can, it's very difficult to keep the motivation that after years and years and years. I'm really convinced that Lewis wants to play a central role into the game with us, and now doubt that he will be mega motivated.
And I suppose it helps as well, having known him for such a long time, you know, here you can help him quickly to adapt to, because he's never raced for a team that doesn't speak English as a first language.
Not true, he raced for ART.
Well, and in Formula One. Good point.
And if we have the same result, it's okay.
It'll be okay. It certainly will. The Formula One team bosses have often been described as a group as the Piranha Club. I'm sure you've heard that before, because they're always trying to have each other over one way or another. And that's a little bit, I guess, the narrative that Drive to Survive picked up and gives a lot of people entertainment. But one of the interesting things about you is you seem to also have some quite close relationships. I mean, you're good friends with Toto Wolff, and you're developing quite a good friendship with Zak Brown, it seems. Tell us how rivals can be friends in this game, and how friends can be rivals.
This for me is coming back to the first question, that it's that the job is difficult, competition is difficult. It's a bit different to the other sport, because that it's every single weekend that we are fighting together, and so that, and you have every single weekend you have a story about the stewards or whatever, that it means that this is creating a kind of permanent fight. But we have also to keep in mind that on tons of other points we are fully aligned on the future of the F1, the development of the F1. And I'm really convinced that we are doing a good job when we are able to discuss together in a normal way. That it means that I know Toto for 25 years now, that I have a good relationship with Zak or with Alpine. But hopefully I would say that, because that we are not there to have a world war. And for the benefit of the F1, I think it's much better if we're able to sit down all together and to find compromise. And it's also much easier to do the job if you have good relationship with the people around you. And that I'm not looking at all for a fight. I'm more than pleased to have a good relationship with everybody on the grid.
What else, Fred, does this team need now in order to make it into a world championship winning outfit?
1/10 of seconds per lap.
Where are you going to get them from?
No, but this, the fight now, it's so tight that from one weekend to the other one, you can move from P1 to P8 or P8 to P1, that Red Bull was struggling in Monaco and they came back in Canada, blah, blah. It means that from one weekend to the other one, from an upgrade to the other one, from a layout or a compound or the weather conditions, the grid will change. It means that we have to accept that it will be like this, to score good points when we are not in a good shape. And it's where we fell also in Canada, because it was a tough weekend and we didn't score points. But we have to keep this momentum and this approach and not to be too emotional. Regarding the performance, the most important is to convince everybody into the company that they are all a performance differentiator. Every single team member will have to contribute to the performance. It's not just the chief aero or the chief engineer, it's everybody at the production to be able to produce a bit quicker, a bit lighter, a bit cheaper, less expensive. and everybody like this. And if we are all pushing in the same direction with this kind of positive attitude, it will work.
It's not steady state though, is it? Because you've got next year, which is not too different from this year. And then it all changes again in 2026. Obviously the cost cap has and other things have brought the field a bit closer together. You worried that 26 opens things up again? And do you need anybody else from outside to help you to get across that line?
No, but we don't have to be scared that it's true that with the current regulation, you have a kind of convergence of performance. And now after 3 or 4 years, I don't know, that we have the feeling that 3, 4, sometimes 5 teams could do the pole position. And this is a great feeling for the championship. And even for us as a competitor, you are going somewhere. You don't know if you will be a P1 or P10. This, I would prefer to be sure that I will do P1, but no misunderstanding. But it's, in terms of competition, it's a great feeling. This, thanks to the stability of the regulation and to the cost cap, for sure that when you open a new regulation, you have always the risk that someone could have a big technical advantage, risk or opportunity, I don't know. But this is more for a fan perspective. As an engineer, I think it's a huge opportunity to create something and to develop something, and it's a good feeling in terms of team that you have to start from scratch and to launch a new project.
Fred, really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for having us here in Mount Allo. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
I think the main thing, first of all, I have to say, I really like Fred. You know, I've known Fred for a while, you know, since he was the owner of the Arc Grand Prix team, along with Nicholas Todd. And I think he's always been like a super character. You know, he's a racer at heart, and that makes a big difference. But what you heard there is something that resonated really strongly with me, which is how, you know, it's his job and he recognizes it's his job to give the team that confidence, to protect the team, to give them the confidence to push, to tell them that, you know, when you're pushing, an inevitable part of pushing the envelope as hard as you can is that you will make mistakes, and to really to live and breathe the non-blame culture. I think once the blame culture starts to creep in a Formula One team, any Formula One team, but especially Ferrari, you are absolutely dead in the water. And I've lived through periods in Ferrari, my time in Ferrari, you know, I lived through periods where you were absolutely protected to get on with your job and to keep pushing as hard as you can. You were expected to be on your A game all of the time. But when mistakes did happen, when inevitable mistakes did happen, because you were pushing hard, you know, there was a protection there. There was an understanding there. There was a almost an unwritten understanding that, you know, as a team, we're going to make mistakes, but we're only making mistakes because we're pushing so hard and building capability and building faster cars and building better operations. And I think, you know, one of the things that has happened, clearly under Fred, is improved operations. He's given the team more confidence. He's given the team more confidence just to do better. He's made some changes to that racing team, if you like, but he has given them more confidence. I think in terms of the car, you know, the car has been a good car for some years now. They've had a decent car for quite a few years. He's obviously augmenting that, and he's giving the designers and the technical team confidence, you know, the same as what he's doing with the racing team. But it was really, for a long time, the racing team that was letting the side down. And you see the whole thing gelling together now. People, almost the same group of people, but just more confident. And that's what can happen in a Formula One team.
Roberto, what does it mean to be a non-Italian manager in Maranello?
Apparently, it may seem like a limitation, but actually, I don't think it's a problem. And sometimes I get the feeling that Fred understands very well Italian, but he doesn't want to speak for fear of being misunderstood. On the other hand, if you are a newcomer, the story, how can I say, starts from a blank sheet, and there are no previous relationship. So everybody in the team knows that they will be judged just for they will do. When a new boss is coming in every team, is seen as an opportunity. And I remember that when Fred arrived in Maranello, a lot of people were expecting a big revolution, many changing in the staff. But Fred had the opposite approach, based on the motivation, is what Rob mentioned before, based on the motivation of those who were already there. And at the moment, the approach is paying a lot. And from this point of view, I think to be non-Italian is a big advantage.
So another Frenchman, Jean Todt, managed Ferrari's most successful period, as I mentioned earlier on, the Michael Schumacher, Felipe Massa, Rubens Barrichello era. And he once told me for a book I was writing about the lived experience of Ferrari team bosses, he said, quote, "When I arrived, no one had any faith in me because I was French." Quote unquote, but he, you know, he turned that around through a combination of effort and commitment and obviously hours served, and eventually, as we said, he had huge success. Rob, I wonder, can you see Vasseur emulating Todd, starting a new era now, particularly with Hamilton and Leclerc as the lineup, or is it just different times, a different era of Formula One?
No, I think that's the, you know, it's the one constant through Formula One through the ages, is that, you know, the success is defined by the people. Success is defined by how good your people are. You know, there's been so many, teams in history that have had, you know, good infrastructure, huge budgets, whatever it is, but they haven't been able to, affect any kind of success because they just haven't had good enough people. So starting from, you know, Jean back in my time, downwards, and, you know, the same with Fred now, you know, he can affect a new era. And I think he is affected a new era. I think this is, you know, since Jean, we've been waiting for somebody to, come to Ferrari who had the autonomy and the personality, the intellect, to be able to build a team, to be able to mold an organization in his own image. And you see now, you can, you know, I have lots of friends who are still at Ferrari. As I said, you know, I'll go to one in every three Grand Prix. So I see the team and I stay with the team and spend time with them. And you see the personality of the team has changed. Just as the personality, it was very different under Jean. You know, we were possibly, you talked about it in that, in your interview, James, you know, with how serious Fred can come across, or, you know, he brings humility and humor as part of his personality. I think with Jean, it was very, very different. You know, we were just super serious all the time and super head down, but that was his image that he built the team in. And I think that, you know, you're certainly seeing Fred's personality come through in the rest of the team now, and that culture, and that characteristic. And it's exactly what the team needed, because it was too serious and making too many mistakes and not allowing itself the freedom of creation. And I think now that we've got that, and got that back in Ferrari, I think that you see this is where the success is coming from. Definitely the team is more relaxed, but it's producing better results. So, you know, you can see that the team's boss does define the personality of the team itself.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And Roberto, I mean, confidence is such a critical thing. We've touched on it before. Rob's mentioned how important it is. And I mean, that's in any sports team, the team or any individual sports person, they need to feel confidence. You can really see when the confidence evaporates away from a driver or a footballer or whatever. But with Ferrari, it's particularly acute, isn't it? It's quite a fragile thing. There is so much pressure from outside. I guess, can you kind of just put into words for us, like, if you work for Ferrari and you're Italian, I guess, you know, at the school gates, you know, people's expectations are hanging on you, and down the supermarket. I mean, is that what the lived experience is like for them? And is that why confidence can be very fragile?
Yeah, I think it's an old story, this one, James. You have to consider that in Ferrari, everything is in the spotlight. I think Rob can confirm this. He had a long experience there. You feel the media pressure every day. In the past, without going too far back in time, the strategist team ended up in the eye of the storm due to some wrong choices not a long time ago.
Yeah, definitely.
And the same happened for technical directors, chief aerodynamic, engine department, so on. So in this scenario, you have to consider that it's not easy to expose yourself with the risky choices. And the team was a bit scared about. I think Fred Vasseur is trying to manage the situation, pushing the people in the team to be a little bit more aggressive. And he's doing this, making it clear that no one is risking their job. And this is a big step. Because in the past, everybody was a little bit scared. What's going to happen if I do a mistake? I'm losing my job. I stay home. That was the first. Rob is smiling a little bit, but I think you know, Rob, that sometimes when you finish in Italian is tempesta, when you are in the eye of the storm, and It's not easy to work in Ferrari. I think it's not easy in Formula One, but particularly in Ferrari.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that's a kind of culture that Toto Wolff brought in at Mercedes. I remember him saying, you know, he has one of his many mantras is blame the problem, not the person. Yeah. Get to the bottom of the problem, figure out what it was, but don't blame the person. You mentioned blame culture at the beginning, Rob, and it is interesting that does seem culturally to be a change that has happened under Vasseur compared to some of the previous owners, or to previous team bosses, I should say. So I guess this is a perfect juncture at which to kind of move the conversation on a little bit and then imagine dropping a 7-times world champion into this team. You feel Ferrari has momentum now. You know, they've won 3 Grand Prix up to this point of recording under Vasseur. They're going along well. As you say, they've cleaned up the operations. They're making better strategic choices. They just look like they're walking around with a bit more confidence. But they're going to drop a 7-times world champion in there. However, they're dropping a 40-year-old, as he will be in the beginning of next season, 7-time world champion in there. So let's talk a little bit about how that's going to work. How do you see that playing out, Rob?
Honestly, I you know, my opinion here is that it's only going to be bring more success. I think that, you know, for Ferrari have 2 excellent drivers, right? There's no doubt about that. In Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, they have 2 very, very competent drivers who are capable of winning Grand Prix and certainly capable of winning world championships. The one single point that you have to make is neither of them have actually done that. Neither of them actually won world championships. And the team now, there'll be a lot of the team that, you know, it's either a long, long time since they've won world championships or they've never won a world championship. So having somebody who sits in your car every Sunday afternoon gives you, again, it's that confidence word, right? It gives you that little bit of confidence. Ferrari don't need to make big changes, right? And when we went back, you know, everybody, I remember listening to what Roberto said then. I can remember people talking to me saying, oh, Fred's not doing anything. Fred's not making any changes. I said, but you've misunderstood the situation. Fred doesn't need to make any big changes, right? The team is already in really good shape, but they're missing the last 5%. So it's not a team that was 6th, 7th on the grid, you know, at the 5th, 6th quickest car or whatever. And was struggling to understand. This was a team that had a really fast car, and a fast car is 90% of the work in Formula One. So he didn't need to make big changes. He needed to make small changes. And again, this is a subtle change, right? He's not bringing a driver in that is going to find them 3/4 tenths, because that's what they're missing. He's bringing a driver in that knows how to win races and therefore world championships, from not always a position of dominance, from a position where you need to get into a dogfight, right? So drivers like Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, Michael Schumacher, Fernando Alonso, those are drivers that you want to put in the car that you know will go into a dogfight, that you know will go into equal machinery with 2-3 other cars in wet, dry conditions, in difficult conditions, and we'll be able to lift the team. We'll be able to bring the team up just that extra notch. And I think that's what Lewis will do for this team. The team now needs literally another 1% of performance. And that's the type of thing that a driver like Lewis Hamilton, a 7-times world champion, who is absolutely hungry for that 8th world championship, right? He is, make no mistake about this guy, he is desperate for that world championship. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing it. What's the point in carrying on? What's the point in going to Ferrari with all the pressure that that brings? What's the point in sticking out another 2 years in Mercedes in relatively, you know, much worse position than he'd been in for that period that he enjoyed before? So this guy is really, really hungry and really, really motivated and really, really ambitious to win world championships for himself and for the team. And I think that will give them that extra 1% lift that they need.
Yeah, and that's what Fred asked when I said to him, what does this team still need? He said 1/10 of a second, you know, and that's exactly, you say, that little bit, that margin at the top. Interesting then to see how obviously Red Bull changed now over this next period, a little bit of unsettled behaviour there with all the distractions that have been going on during the 24 season, the power struggles and all the rest of it that we've talked about. We'll come on to talk about Adrian Newey and what part he might play in this. But Roberto, I'm fascinated by where this leaves Charles Leclerc. I mean, he's the golden boy, really, at Ferrari, Nicholas Todd, his manager. Culturally, they understand that team inside out and back to front. They know exactly how Ferrari operates. Hamilton has never operated in a non-English speaking Formula One team. It's a long time, 20 years since he drove for a French team for Fred Vasseur in F3 and GP2. But how do you see Leclerc turning that to his advantage? And what do you think the consequences of Hamilton's arrival will be for Charles Leclerc?
Many people thought that the choice to have Lewis in the team was not a good signal for Leclerc. But I have, honestly, an opposite view. I think that for Charles is a chance to have Lewis with him. It would have been very difficult, very different to have Oliver Biermann, for example, as a teammate. Imagine if Biermann was a bit faster than Leclerc. Would have been a big risk for Charles. Exactly the same happened in 2019 for Vettel with a young Leclerc. When you have a driver like Lewis as teammate, it's more comfortable. It's not a drama if sometimes it will be faster than 2/10, or you are slower 2/10 than a 7-time world champion. And at the same time, the day when you'll be faster than Lewis will be a good add value, no, for you. The biggest risk for Charles was Biermann, in my opinion. With Lewis, I don't want to say will be comfortable, but will be better than for Carlos, because Carlos was a little bit underrated with the arriving Ferrari, and when he was faster than Leclerc, was a bad news for Charles, because nobody thought that Sainz was a very top level in Formula One. I think with Lewis, everything is clear. I add that he had the opportunity to learn something from Lewis, that's for sure. I think that Fred said, one of the reasons why we decide to have Lewis with us is also to have someone that comes from a top team. So we want to a little bit compare our mentality with another one that is coming from a very high-level team as Mercedes is. So globally, I think that the decision was largely by Fred. Of course, the president, John Elkann, was of the same idea. Otherwise, it would not be possible to start a negotiation.
So let's move on to talking about another possible arrival, another Brit who might find himself at Ferrari, Adrian Newey. We know he's leaving Red Bull in the spring of 2025, and we know he's a free agent. And he's recently also said that rather than retire, he doesn't want to turn out like his father did and lose his mojo at 65. He wants to keep going because Bernie Eccleston and Roger Penske have told him to keep the brain working until your old age. So it sounds like he's reasonably motivated as well. I asked Fred in that interview, rather than directly just mentioning Newey, where he would have had a stock media answer to come back, I asked him if there's any one or anything he needed to move Ferrari forward. And he did go on to say that sometimes Ferrari can be a bit isolated and they need perhaps to bring in some winning culture, some understanding from other teams in order to move forward. So what does all of this mean, do you think, for the possibility of bringing in Adrian Newey?
I think Adrian needs no introduction, for sure. He will be able to give a big boost to the company, the side to have in this future. There has been much speculation, James, about Newey next team. We read and we listen everything at the opposite. At the moment, I can hardly imagine Newey in Maranello, but this season, a lot of incredible things are happening, so it can happen. And the question is, can Adrian successfully integrate himself into Ferrari technical department? I think in consultant role, I think yes. But the final question is about the pride of Mr. Candile and his department. We all know from the first day Adrian Newey should be red-dressed, all the technical project made in Maranello will be associated with him. That's for sure. Whether they design all car or just a small part of a front wing. So it will be interesting to see how the actual technical department will accept the situation, because for sure their role from outside, I mean, especially from the media, will be a little bit downsized. But if I had to bet, I think that it's a very big opportunity for the team. To use Adrian as a consultant, I think is exactly what Red Bull has done in the last 10 years. It's a very big opportunity, and I think they're not going to miss it.
Roberto, you've taken this conversation in exactly the direction I was hoping you would, because this for me is very, very interesting. And this is Rob, I think, will have a very interesting perspective on this, because when he was at Ferrari, particularly in the latter days, you had Rory Byrne, who was a guy who was a legendary chassis designer and engineer. So he designed the early championship-winning Ferraris of Michael Schumacher. And then he mentored some of the younger guys like Aldo Costa, who designed the later ones. And Rory wanted to go off and run a diving school in Thailand. And eventually the team persuaded him to sort of have an involvement, which this is all pre-Zoom and pre-sort of video conferencing and all the rest of it. So imagine that sort of scenario with Newey, who has a beautiful home in South Africa where he spends a lot of time, which is plugged in as if he was at the factory, communicating with the racetrack. It's a very similar setup. So he can have that, as you say, that kind of consultant role at Ferrari, which maintains the pride of the Ferrari engineers, but means you've got that beady eye of Newey's on, particularly on 2026 regulations. Rob, if you were in Vasseur's shoes, would you go for it with Newey? And if you did, how would you integrate him?
If I was in Fred's shoes, I would go for it in a heartbeat. Of course I would, because it's just talent. And I think that it's you just want in any business, it doesn't have to be, this is not exclusive to Formula One. You just have to embed as much talent as you can, into that business and then get it working together. So your question is the more important part of the question, James, I guess is how do you integrate, Adrian, and I don't know, I don't know Enrico Cardile very well. We've met and spoken on a few occasions. Knowing Adrian, Adrian within the team will actually have very little ego. I think that if people, the current technical team, if they don't know him personally, then they're probably expecting, because of his achievements and success, they're probably expecting, a big ego to come with that. I think what you find with Adrian is that there isn't an ego behind it. He very quietly gets on with his work. So there is a little bit of integration work to be done. Without a doubt, whether or not Adrian comes in as chief technical officer or whether he comes in as super consultant, whatever the situation is, everybody has to understand, or whatever the title is, everybody's got to understand what the situation is. You're trying to extract as much of Adrian's talent as you possibly can into the technical department to make the car as fast and as unbeatable as possible, as has happened with many of Adrian's cars over the ages in Formula One. So I think that they have to, if they have a chance, just as Mercedes will be trying, they have to do, everything that they possibly can to get Adrian embedded. And at the same time, I honestly don't think that the integration part will be that difficult. I think Adrian will want to come in. He will want to mold the technical team around him. Fred would obviously want that to happen, otherwise what's the point in bringing him in? And I think it's up to Adrian. It's a two-way street. It would be up to Adrian Newey and it would be up to the current technical people to find a way that they could integrate and work together. Honestly, my opinion here is really clear. If you've got people there sat there thinking, well, what does this mean for me and my ego, they're perhaps not right for the team anyway. My favourite part of working in Formula One on the team side, people ask me about it all the time and they'll say, what was great about it? Was it this part? Everybody gets it wrong. The best part, and you ask somebody like Adrian or all the people who work for him at Red Bull currently, the best part is the teamwork. It's working in a really high-functioning, high-performing team and playing your role within that team. Once you're inside Formula One, I think there's a notion of perhaps a lack of understanding from the outside of what the perception is. The perception is that, everything is based on a single person or one or two, superstars within the team. It's never like that. I've never worked in a successful team that's been like that. And Adrian will know what success means and will know how important the teamwork element is and the teamwork culture. So he will work hard to make that happen, with whatever
role he comes in at, as like I said, whether it's chief technical officer or a super consultant. And the other team members have to do the same as well. And if they do that and they all find a way to work together, they will have more success than they have today. And what's not appealing about that? If that's not appealing to you, you're probably doing the wrong job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So final question to you both then. One of my favourite parts of the interview with Fred was when we talk about whether friends can be rivals and rivals can be friends. He's known Toto Wolff. They've been good friends for over 25 years. He's developing a bit of a bromance with Zac Brown. He's got good relationships with a lot of the team bosses, but particularly when you're competing directly at the same level of the grid with people, it isn't easy for friends to be rivals and rivals to be friends. And certainly, Rob, a lot of your and my Formula One career, the team bosses were at each other's throats and gave each other that nickname of the Piranha Club. It's something that Drive to Survive really seeks to play on and build up that sort of narrative. But I'd just be interested in both of your perspectives on this. Roberto, you're a very close observer of all these dynamics. How do you see Fred's a bit unusual in the sense that he likes to be friends with these guys, right?
Yeah, he surprised me a lot in the past, because when you meet Fred, you don't think he's a politic one. Especially 20 years ago, I remember, he was running his team. He was active working in the team. I remember one of the first remember I have of Fred, he was changing the floor in F3 car. So was absolutely integrating in the team. But I remember he became the best friends of Martin Whitmarsh when he had Lewis Hamilton. And this relationship saved the career of Lewis Hamilton in 2004, because Fred was pushing a lot with Martin just to give a second chance to Lewis, because he had a very bad 2004 in Formula 3. Then he became one of the best friends of Toto Wolff. And then now you mentioned one of the best... I don't want to say the best friends of Zac Brown, but he has a very good relation with Zac Brown. He has a very close relationship with Carlos Tavares, that is the CEO of Stellantis Group. And someone thinks that this relationship helped Fred to arrive in Ferrari in that role. So I think it's one of the qualities that Fred always had in the past. Probably now in Formula One is more... It's more clear for everybody, because you are under the spotlight. Everybody can see which kind of approach you have. But he always had this quality, the capacity to build a strong relationship with the key people in motorsport. And now in Formula One, I think it's absolutely important. For him, it's an important asset, an important attitude. Because Formula One is, as you mentioned, the Piranha Club. It is correct. It's correct. But the capacity to have good relationship is fundamental in Formula One. And that probably is the biggest additional value of Fred Vasseur, of course, together with the ordinary job that I'm sure that he is able to do every day.
Well, that brings us to the end of this podcast. Our thanks to Fred Vasseur, to Rob Smedley and Roberto Quincaro. You can read all of Roberto's sharp F1 writing on motorsport.com Italy and also on Autosport. Please do email your comments or questions to jamesallenonf1@motorsport.com. We'll do a question and answer podcast very soon to go through them. Make sure you check out all the behind-the-scenes F1 stories on Autosport this weekend, and follow the Autosport podcast with Bryn Lucas during this Spanish Grand Prix. And my thanks to Dre, to Matt, and to Jason on production. And thanks to you for listening. Please click to follow or subscribe and tell all your F1 mad friends all about us. We'll be back with another podcast very soon.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No.